Welcome to the AVA Journal Legal Rebels podcast, where we talk to men and women who are remaking the legal profession, changing the way the law is practiced, and setting standards that will guide us into the future.
We've talked a lot on the show about how generative AI tools are changing the legal industry, and a major worry for many lawyers is that these tools could replace them or make them redundant. But what about the potential of generative AI to help lawyers generate business, market themselves more effectively, and, yes, make more money? Well, then today's show is for you. My name is Victor Lee, and I'm Assistant Managing Editor of the ABA Journal. My guest on today's episode of the Legal Rebels podcast is a good friend of the program, as in this is a second appearance. Guy Sakalakis, founder of AttorneySync and EPL Digital, and a digital marketing expert, is here to talk about business development and generative AI. Thanks for joining us, Guy.
Victor, so glad to be here, and I consider myself a good friend of the show, so thank you for that introduction.
You might be the best friend of the show, actually. I think it's either you or Nikki Black that's leading the horse race these days.
Well, I'm in great company, and I'm grateful to be here and can't wait to talk.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this as well. So obviously, I just gave a very, very short version of your bio. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So I started my professional career as a trial attorney at a very small firm. And as a young attorney, was tasked with going out into the world and figuring out what the firm should be doing and what lawyers are doing online. And as I did that research, short version was a lot of lawyers, this is back 2007, six, said, people won't use the internet to find lawyers like me. And I was like, agreed to disagree. So in 2008, we founded a digital agency that works solely with law firms. And then in 2013, I founded another agency that's outside of legal altogether. And I do some speculative tech, legal tech investing and advising, Lawmatics, and a couple other portfolio companies. So I've lived at the intersection of law practice and technology now for coming up on 20 years. So I'm getting pretty old. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you and me both. So let me ask, what made you decide to focus on legal marketing? I mean, what was it about lawyers? I mean, it's not a skill that's really taught in law school. Most people have to figure it out for themselves, trial and error. So what was it about legal marketing that really made you decide, okay, this is what I want to do with my time?
Yeah, I think naturally, because coming from being a lawyer and knowing a lot of lawyers and knowing some of the frustrations that lawyers face with dealing, you know, trying to navigate this marketing stuff and seeing what was out there in the marketplace at the time, I was like, gosh, this is just ripe opportunity for delivering a better service, more transparency, more accountability. And so that's really how we got involved in legal. It was because I was a lawyer. And like I said, then, 6 years later, we expanded into some other verticals. But, lawyers are my people. You know, I've been going to tech shows since I just got started. I mean, most of my professional network is in law practice, law tech. And so I think that was a natural fit for us to be in with law.
Gotcha. So what was the main complaint about marketing that you would hear from lawyers? Like, is it just, oh, I don't know what to do, or is it just too many things and I don't know which ones to focus on, or I don't have enough time, or, I didn't get into the law to have to learn about SEO and social media and advertising and that kind of stuff. Like, what was the main complaint that you would hear from lawyers about marketing?
Well, you really just nailed it right there with all of those, but if I had to pick maybe two of those, it's the time, right? Like lawyers, they don't have time. I mean, if you're a billable lawyer, time is your inventory. And so spending it on things that aren't billable is expensive. And I think the second thing is it's just a lack of subject matter knowledge. Like you said, they don't teach business and marketing, although they are starting to teach business and marketing in some of these law schools. Hat tip to Ruby Powers. I know she's I've been a guest in her class, and so that's great to see that transition. But, it's time and subject matter expertise, and really it's ultimately, to me, it's about connecting the dots between what you're putting out into the world and how it's actually helping your firm grow. That's the part that even the lawyers that have enough knowledge to be dangerous, it's really challenging to connect all these pieces together to go from, ad impression to click all the way to fee.
And so what was sort of, before the advent of generative AI, like what was the main way they would generate business and market themselves? Was it networking? Was it referrals? Was it advertising, social media? It seems that there's always something for them to learn. So was that part of the struggle, that idea of, I just learned how to do this. Now I got to learn something new?
I think so. I mean, to answer your first question, for forever, lawyers thought, and there's still this thinking out there, that you just do good work, do good legal work.
Yeah.
Your clients will talk about you and tell their friends, and then more legal work will come. And that's true. And that should really be the cornerstone. You know, I always tell people, I'm like, I mean, the interesting part about it that lawyers miss is that it's not just the legal work itself, because in many law practice contexts, the client has no idea what quality legal work actually looks like. But they do know what it's like to be treated with respect, to be responded to. And so there's this service component to law practice. And in fact, you know, lawyers that do a great job of providing great service, they tend to get more referrals. And that's still a thing. But really what's changed over the last, at least in the last 20 years, is the tools at our disposal to be able to provide great service, to, you know, I always say marshal the evidence of our good reputation for whether it's professionalism or service or whatever it's going to be. And so, and I always, the other resource that I'll tell listeners to go to if they haven't already, is Clio's Legal Trends Report, which was, you know, they did some survey data, and, you know, Avvo has one, Martindale has one, where they, you know, they ask legal services consumers, like, how would you go about finding a lawyer? And, you know, this, it's not surprising. A lot of it's word of mouth referrals. But the, now these word of mouth referrals, instead of just taking place in real life and, you know, via phone calls and maybe emails, you've got messaging systems, you've got social networks, you've got blog subscriptions, you've got search engines. And so, anyway, the fundamental know, like, and trust stuff about business development still exists. It's just how these messages are being communicated that's really changed and really proliferated in such a way that it can be overwhelming pretty quickly.
Gotcha. All right, so let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and we'll talk some more about this.
Get Civil, and you get a fast, custom-built website that looks great, brings you clients, and drops them right into your firm's systems. Civil partners perfectly with small firms by building the fastest sites in legal, handling digital marketing, enhancing your leads, and providing transparent analytics. They're civil to your other tech, too. Civil websites integrate with all legal case management systems, including Clio, Smokeball, MyCase, and Lawmatics. Get a free site audit with a no-obligation 15-minute demo about what Civil can do for your website. GetCivil.com. That's GetCivil.com. All rise with Civil. If you're like me, you're probably a bit frustrated with the state of our political system today. Democracy Decoded, a podcast by Campaign Legal Center, examines our government and discusses innovative ideas that could lead to a stronger, more transparent, accountable, and inclusive democracy. Listen at democracydecoded.org to their new season, which takes a deep dive into democracy at the state and local level by highlighting different ways to ensure that every voter's voice is heard.
And we're back. So, obviously, let's talk about generative AI because that's the theme of today's show. So for people who aren't familiar with it, can you explain a little bit about it and how it can be used by lawyers?
Sure. I don't want to get too technical, but, you know, whether you're using ChatGPT or you're using Copilot or you're using Google Gemini, the short version is that, you know, generative AI takes it, it has a corpus from which it can pull a response to. And so when you enter a prompt, it tries to predict essentially what it, kind of response it thinks that you're trying to elicit based on what you put into the prompt. So what does that mean? Well, you know, you can write in the context of marketing, very simple thing could be like, write me a blog post of like 10 things I should do or 10 things I should know about if I'm thinking about filing divorce, then we'll spit back a blog post. Now, the relative quality, quote unquote, quality of that response is going to be largely dependent on the prompt and some of the nuances of like how you're using the tool. But there's huge issues with it, right? You know, we talk about hallucinations. It's not reliable. Is it plagiarizing? Is it copying? Where's the source data? And so, you know, my view of kind of how we think about it in the marketing context, it's a great tool for inspiration. So, you know, you got writer's block. And you need to, like, you know, list some of the things that I should be talking about if I want to write a post about divorce. That kind of prompt is very, very effective. But, you know, I think it's gotten kind of lost in the whole messaging around this, that this is, and we talk about it even in the context of law practice, that it just is the replacement for human beings. It's not the replacement. It's just another tool in our arsenal to help us do things more efficiently. And so the thing I always tell people, I'm like, use the bot to do the things that the bot's good at, and then do the things that, as a human being, that the human being's still better at. And certainly editing and reviewing and empathizing and, you know, a lot of the different service components to law practice and into legal marketing, you know, they still require a human being. It's not a replacement.
Right. And I mean, I've looked at some of these blog posts and, you know, played around with the tool as well. And kind of like, hey, write me a blog post about this, or write me a blog post just to see what it's like. And I mean, you can always tell when you're seeing like the canned language and you're seeing the very kind of general responses to things and how, you know, it's not necessarily in the voice of the person. And like, as a marketer, I mean, how authentic do you have to be in order to, because everyone always says, you'll be yourself, you know, market yourself based on your strengths and people respond to the individual. So how do you sort of, you know, craft that so that you can still use, like you said, ChatGPT or some of these tools to help you get going, but then you inject enough of yourself in there so people are like, okay, that was written by so-and-so. I like this person, or I thought that was well done. I'm gonna look at some more blog post by this person.
Yeah, I think it goes exactly to what you just said, which is the one, and you know, I always frame it like this: do what the ChatGPT cannot. The ChatGPT cannot share your stories, right? The ChatGPT can write generic stuff, right? The generative AI right. can write generic, like 10 bullets. It can do talking points based on what it's pulled, but it can't tell the story of how you helped a client or something you've specifically learned in your practice, or maybe there's something unique about what you do, or maybe there's something that you're passionate about in your community. And so surfacing more content and publishing more content that really focuses on that, that's the great distinguisher. And I think another thing that's come out, that's emerging out of this whole generative AI thing, is that there's a bias against the bots. And so I see folks that will go on like LinkedIn and they clearly copied and pasted something from ChatGPT into their LinkedIn post. And when you can tell, it makes them feel less authentic. You're less inclined to engage with it. I mean, would you go on LinkedIn and comment on a post that you know is written by a bot? Like, you're less likely to do it. Now, don't get me wrong, there's all sorts of gray areas here because ChatGPT is getting better, the prompt engineering is getting better, you know, you can revise it. But at the end of the day, the authenticity is the key part. Like, that's the thing that's going to endear you to people, that's going to attract people that want to actually, you know like, and trust and hire you. And so I'd be very careful if you're pumping out generative AI content that's very easily identified as generative AI content. I'd be very careful about what that's doing to your quote unquote brand online.
Right. And I mean, yeah, and that kind of, like you said, I mean, this software is getting better and better, but I mean, it's never going to replicate how someone would write, especially if they don't have, like, you know, tons and tons of your writing to be trained. Or can it get to that point where, like, let's say I take all of my old blog posts from that I've written in my personally, and then I put it in ChatGPT and be like, here, spit me out a post about, you know, drunk driving, but write it like I would. And I post all these links to it. I mean, will we ever get to that point, you think?
So I do think we'll get to that point. In fact, I think we're approaching this kind of Turing moment. But again, it depends, as you said, if you feed the machine, if you say, look, the corpus is solely going to be things that I've written, or, you know, now they can, because they're turning everything into language, so it can consume video and create transcripts and create text off of video. So if you feed it video interviews, if it's just doing it based on me, I do believe it's going to be pretty indistinguishable. And, you know, you talk about deepfakes in video, and if you look at some of these cutting edge ones, they're getting pretty close. And so I do think eventually we're going to get there, that it's going to be, in most contexts, it's going to be very, very difficult to tell. And there's all sorts of philosophical and existential and societal and cultural ramifications of that. But I'm in the camp that, yeah, I think that eventually it's going to be very difficult to tell the difference. But here's the thing, even when it gets that good, if it's watermarked, or if it's, you know, you disclose or have a disclaimer at the beginning of it that, you know, this is fake or whatever you're going to use, that in and of itself is creating this bias against the content. Because again, even if you didn't give me the disclaimer, you didn't give me the watermark, and I couldn't tell, I might be inclined to say, oh, look, this is great, and I'm having that the reaction that the person wants me to have in terms of, you know, contacting and hiring them. If you tell me that it's a bot, I'm going to be less inclined to trust it, and it just feels fake, right? It just doesn't feel like I'm actually in consuming content from the expert that I'm contemplating hiring. So that's really what I think should be a major concern for lawyers who are using it today.
And so What about for like other forms of business development? I mean, what are some ways that lawyers can use these tools to help them, you know, find clients, bring in more money, you know, identify people that might potentially become clients, leads, things like that? What are ways that they can use these tools?
So there's a huge asterisk with a lot of the stuff I'm going to say, because there are privacy issues and there's the devil's in the details of how you implement. But I just want to give some ideas so that we're creating something for people to go and do further research on. But deploying the GPT on your firm data to identify, you know, patterns in client personas and like seeing which clients are most profitable for the firm, identifying language that your potential clients are using so that you can craft messaging that's more resonant with those potential clients. It's amazing for coming up with ad copy variations. So, you know, if you type in, you know, this is my existing ad, give me 25 permutations of this ad copy to go test. It's very useful for that. It's very useful for identifying gaps. So, you know, if you've got an existing piece of content and you're like, you know, if you feed it into the GPT and you ask it to share other topics that you might have missed, I think for blind spot identification, it's very, very effective. So there's all sorts of applications. But, if you think about it, it's like it goes back to that same point of like, well, what is the GPT better at doing than I'm good at doing? And that is, you know, looking at large bodies of text and identifying patterns and synthesizing information. And so I think in those contexts, I think it'd be very, very effective in terms of client development. And so again, I tell everybody, you know, do what the bots cannot and let the bots do what they're better at. You know, one thing that we talk a lot about is in terms of the intake process, like what role can AI play in the intake process, and whether it's chat bots or, you know, voice-based automated communication. You know, look, if someone calls your firm and it's like, hey, I'm looking for the date of my deposition, you know, ChatGPT and AI and generative AI can probably handle that. If someone calls and says, you know, my brother was just killed in a car accident, you know, you got to have a human being to field that. And so, and then there's a million different contexts in between those two examples. But I think finding the ways that you can implement it to, you know, we talked about time. There's no question that it can free up some of your time, automate the tasks that it's good at automating, which also gives you more time to do the other business development tasks, the empathy, the listening, the service, the face-to-face networking. I think that's the real advantage here, not just as a supplement or a replacement for human beings in the context of business development.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, especially for like small firms and solos, if they can't afford to hire someone to help them with the business development or help them with the marketing or whatnot, I mean, would this be a good way to kind of substitute for that?
Absolutely. And again, I think it's a great thing to like type in questions you have, like, you know, how are lawyers today marketing themselves? Give me 25 ideas for marketing campaign ideas. I'm a local divorce law firm in my city. What are some ways that you might market a firm like mine? And I honestly, I've been impressed. You know, it'll talk about things like local community events and like how to design a campaign around that. And so I think from strategic standpoint and ideation and brainstorming and that, you know, that some of that content gap stuff that we talked about, I think it's really, really effective from that standpoint. And, you know, again, if you're willing to pay the $20 a month and getting the souped up version of it, it's even that much more effective. And there's all sorts of different plugins and tools that you can add to modify it. But again, I think it's just really important for people to understand that as a tool, if I understand what it's doing, really, really effective. But, you know, this isn't just like, you know, copy and paste or hook the ChatGPT API to your WordPress API and go nuts. It's got all sorts of issues that you'll create with search engines. And honestly, again, I think the big risk here is like the reputational harm that it causes when it just looks like you're just pumping out this fake content.
All right. So let's take another quick break for a word from our sponsor.
A website from Civil fills your new client pipeline. Prospects find you through powerful SEO, and smart intake forms make it easy to integrate with Clio, Smokeball, Lawmatics, and MyCase. Never lose another lead. Get your Civil bundle, website, SEO, content marketing, and Google Business Profile Management free for 60 days from the legal industry's best end-to-end lead generation platform. Book your demo at getcivil.com. That's getcivile.com.
Delegate out those tasks that take up your time. Staffy can help you with your legal, administrative, marketing, and even client-facing workload. Hiring Staffy's top-notch bilingual virtual staff means Staffy does the recruiting, hiring, and training for you. Then, if you need a change, Staffy handles it. You get to concentrate on your strategic work. Schedule a free consultation at staffy.cc. That's STAFI.cc and get $500 off with code HAPPY24.
And we're back. So we talked a little bit in the last section about how these tools are developing and where things are heading, but let's take a little bit more of a forward look and let's talk a little about where this technology might be heading. So where do you kind of see the state of generative AI as far as like marketing and business development, you know, going into like the next year or the next 5 years? Like, do you think lawyers are going to start using it a lot more? Do you think there's still going to be resistance to it? Like, do you think there's going to be more adoption?
I do. I think when you start to see the benefits that it provides in terms of the time savings and, you know, again, even some of the things like this solution to writer's block, it's just remarkable how effective it is. And so there's going to be the, you know, call it a hybridization, but it's the generative AI is going to fill in the gaps and automate a lot of the things that we've had to do in terms of marketing and business development, but it's not going to replace that human element, at least in the short term. And again, I think the biggest obstacle for where this intersection happens is going to be in trust. And so where the generative AI erodes trust between your target audience, potential clients, and existing clients, that's going to, you know, people are going to be, they're going to resist. But when you see that it's, you know, when it's accomplishing its objectives, it's automating things and freeing up time, and the feedback from the person on the other side of it, whether it's in the intake context or it's in the social media context, is a positive experience. You know, they're consuming generative AI assisted content or generative AI assisted messaging, and they're having a positive experience. I think people are going to say, you know, wow, this is really, really beneficial to my practice, and it's giving me more time to focus on those human service things that I wasn't able to focus as much on before when I was doing a lot of the things that generative AI is now automated for me.
Gotcha. So let me ask you a hypothetical question. Like, let's say I'm starting a law firm. I'm not going to, but let's just say I'm a glutton for punishment, and I'm just going to start my own law firm. So obviously, you know, million things that you have to do, and all, you know, swimming upstream and everything like that. How you're going to set things up? How you're going to stand out from the crowd and things like that. So let's say I came to you for help. I'm like, gee, I don't even know where to start. I'm completely overwhelmed. You know, I've heard about these generative AI tools. I've heard they can really help as far as marketing, but also doing research and things like that. I mean, would you recommend that I just kind of like jump in and use it, you know, while still like obviously not relying on it to like, you know, generate, you know, all of my content, but just would you recommend that I like, you know, implement it into my firm just on the research side or on the marketing side or both? Or, you know, would it depend on sort of like where my strengths are and what my, you know, capabilities are?
Yeah, I'll try to avoid the it depends, but that is the right answer. But I'll try to avoid the it depends questions. I think certainly from a research standpoint, there's no question that it's very, very effective. You know, how do lawyers market themselves? I mean, as simple as that kind of prompt. And then the follow-ups, and you'll get better at, you know, kind of asking the prompts as you play with the tool. And I think most lawyers would be impressed, like, oh, hey, that's something I hadn't thought of that I could do and go execute on. In the publishing context, again, as long as you're conscientious about, like, you're not feeding it client information, all of your rules of professional conduct are being followed, I think that it can be a supportive role in the publishing context. I wouldn't be relying on it for, you know, subject matter expertise or citing cases or anything like that, or, you know, necessarily like legal research. But certainly in terms of like, you know, hey, what are the things that people who are looking for a divorce lawyer, like, what do they care about? Those kind of questions, I think, is really, really effective to use the prompt for, to get ideas about how you might craft messaging. I think it's great for teasing out different, you know, whether it's taglines or marketing like advertising headlines, ad creative, you know, and again, as it keeps evolving. You can, it's not just text. You can create imagery with this. You're going to be able to create video content with this. And so I think as long as you've got an eye, you're understanding kind of like what some of the risks are, and you're very conscientious about how you're using it in terms of what you're entering into it. And then, of course, you're reviewing everything that comes out of it and editing it as appropriate. I would certainly advise folks to be on it, certainly in the research, the ideation, and the, like, you know, the kind of outline Q&A type of usage. I think there's no question that it's extremely valuable for helping the lawyers tailor their marketing messages.
And let me just ask you personally, too. I mean, have you been surprised at just how, I mean, obviously, it hasn't been completely adopted by people in the legal industry, but I think it's fair to say there's been more adoption of these tools as compared to, like, some other, you know, piece of technology that have come down over the last, like, couple of decades. Have you been surprised at just how quickly some people in the industry have embraced this?
I have. I always think about the cloud paradigm, right? So when all software was on premises and cloud started coming out, I remember and maybe some of this is just like the time that I came up, because I'm sure people that have been doing this longer than me have other examples of this technologically, and you can LinkedIn or at me on X or whatever to tell me about your story. But I remember the lawyers being like, there's no way that cloud is going to be secure. There's no way I would trust cloud. And I remember, you know, Jack Newton fought this battle, and a lot of other cloud pioneers. Tech Show was a constant topic of conversation for years. And there was so much resistance to it, and ethics opinions and all this stuff. And then this thing comes along, and total opposite. You know, I see lawyers all the time. Like, I go to a law firm's website, and it's like clearly got AI generated content. You go to the chatbots on their website, and it's clearly generative AI enabled chatbots. And I always ask myself, like, you know, what's the difference? And I think some of it's the frictionless of it, right? It's so easy to use. It's so easy just to either download the app or go to the URL, type it in, and you're just like, wow. I don't have to write anything anymore. I don't have to write emails. I don't have to write text messages. I don't have to write blog posts. But I also think it's like we're kind of deceiving ourselves. Like, lawyers are looking at this and they're like, the upside seems so good from an efficiency standpoint, but they're not really looking at what's coming out of it with a critical eye and saying, that doesn't sound like me, or people aren't really going to buy that this is me. And so anyway, I think we're going to have our reckoning with this. But the lawyers that are doing it in a way that it's seamless, that you can't tell that they're using it, that their stories are still coming through, those are the ones that are going to win the future. Because at the end of the day, marketing is still largely about standing out and gaining a reputation for knowledge, skill, and experience and service. And right now, like the GPT, like, yes, it can be fast. Yes, it can pull data points that you might not be able to access. But in terms of providing that, like, real expertise and that real level of service that lawyers deliver, it's just not there yet.
Yeah. Now, I think you're right about how just intuitive it is, because I remember, I think when I first got into legal reporting, I think that was when TAR was first starting. And, you know, I mean, everyone was like, well, I mean, you know, my editor especially was like, oh, this is incredible. This is going to revolutionize everything and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and I mean, it was incredible, you know, innovation and whatnot. But I remember then I learned about it a little, and even just very superficially, I was like, you know, telling me about seed sets and this, and my head just started hurting. I'm like, I don't understand this stuff. Like, this is not, you know, I could understand why it was so beneficial, but it wasn't like I was going to run out and be like, oh, I have to, like, get on this, or I have to, like, do this, you know. But ChatGPT is like, anybody can use it, anybody can sign up for it, and anybody can type in a prompt and get something back. And I think, yeah, you're right. It is, there's something very intuitive and very, you know, simple about it that draws people in, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, look, if you're a Microsoft user or a Google user, you know, it's baked right into your workspace. Like, you really just literally just click a button to enable it. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's like suggesting prompts. And, you know, and marketing people have known, like, Google Analytics has had automated insights, and the Google Ads has been providing insights and suggestions, even though I wouldn't suggest people use the Google Ads insights and suggestions. So that's a conversation for another day. it's baked into everything. So it's almost unavoidable. And again, it's intuitive, it's easy to use, and it's frictionless in terms of its access to all of the tools that we use professionally.
Gotcha. And finally, to wrap up, if our listeners wish to get in touch with you, I mean, you had mentioned it a little bit earlier, but what's the best way to do so?
You can type in my long name into LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn, GYI. I won't spell my last name. Usually it just comes up. I'm also active on Twitter. Or you can contact me through AttorneySync, attorneysync.com. And I love talking law practice and tech, so feel free to hit me up anytime.
Great. Thanks again for joining us, Guy. I appreciate it.
Victor, my pleasure. Really great chatting with you today.
Yeah, good to talk to you again. And I guess I'll see you at Tech Show, right?
Can't wait.
Yep. If you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more, please go to your favorite app and check out some other titles from Legal Talk Network. In the meantime, I'm Victor Lee, and I'll see you next time on the ABA Journal Legal Rebels podcast.
If you'd like more information about today's show, please visit LegalRebels.com, LegalTalkNetwork.com, subscribe via iTunes and RSS, find both the ABA Journal and Legal Talk Network on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn, or download the free apps from ABA Journal and Legal Talk Network in Google Play and iTunes. The views expressed by the participants of this program are their own and do not represent the views of, nor are they endorsed by, Legal Talk Network, its officers, directors, employees, agents, representatives, shareholders, and subsidiaries. None of the content should be considered legal advice. As always, consult a lawyer.
How is SpaceX going to shape the future of aerospace law?
What are the courts doing to address the ongoing mental health crisis?
How do institutions of higher education handle allegations of misconduct?
When you have questions about the law, don't get lost in the sea of Google results. Go to the bar, the State Bar of Texas, that is. Every month on the State Bar of Texas podcast, I invite the state's top thought leaders and innovators to share their insights on groundbreaking issues that impact you and your practice. Start listening today.